We have reached pick number 16, the Boston Celtics, on the Amateur Hour podcast mock draft. I'm Brian Gibberman here with Sam Vecini, joined by Mass Live's Tom Westerholm. Tom, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. So let's start here. 16 and 28, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, in the on the hindsight train over here, was it all worth it? Or would you rather be in the lottery?
That's the big question. And I, you know, when you tweet it out and you're followed by a lot of Celtics people and you say anything negative about the playoff run, just immediate hatred. Yes, it was all worth it. Yes, it was amazing. Yes, I'm so glad that the Celtics got swept by the Cavaliers and never really mounted that much of a fight. You'll get all of that immediately from every single Celtics follower. It's pretty difficult to look at the middle of the lottery, which is kind of where the Celtics would have ended up, and not have some regrets at this point. You know, when you take a look at the chance that Willie Cauley-Stein might slip a little bit, you know, the chance that any of those guys, you know, the Stanley Johnsons, that those guys are going to be available. And then you kind of look at where the Celtics are going to be picking. They can certainly trade up, and, you know, that's definitely something that I expect them to be looking at. But, you know, the early returns, it would have been a lot easier to just, you know, have maybe more of a competitive season than last year, but still just kind of slip out of the playoffs and get the better draft pick just on their own.
Yeah, it's a tough call for the Celtics because they have a lot of picks in the next two drafts. They have four in this draft. They have 16, 28, 33, and 45. Is that right?
Correct. Yep.
Yep. Okay. And then next draft, they have seven picks. seven that are likely to confer. So that's
right.
It's a lot of ammo, and it's a lot of chances for them to pick up talent. A lot of chances to move up in the draft if they really would want to. So with most other teams, I would say that it was a terrible idea to make the playoffs and, you know, get swept by the Cavs and have Marcus Smart, you know, gain that great playoff experience that, you know, getting swept by the Cavs just so often gives you. But in the Celtics case, you know, they have so many chances coming up here to get that star that they need that I kind of get it. Like, I don't hate it, I guess.
It's not an indefensible, I guess it's not really a decision. It's not an indefensible strategy. And it wasn't technically a strategy, really. I think when Danny Ainge traded Rondo, he was throwing everything out the window. He was just saying, all right, let's do this. Fortunately or unfortunately, Brad Stevens is an incredible coach. Isaiah Thomas fit perfectly into his system. They decided to go get Isaiah Thomas. I think they were planning to get him in the offseason anyway. Excuse me. And I think that the general plan was to just, let him, you know, go to another team and then acquire him in the offseason and when they were going to try to get a little bit better anyway. They just decided at the trade deadline they had the opportunity. They might as well go get him. They did it. And, you know, that makes sense. They got a very good player on a very good contract. So, you know, you can't really be too angry at that. I think the biggest issue with saying, okay, they have a lot of picks, so they could always move up. They could certainly move up, but I don't know how high. It's not like when you have the 16th pick, it's not like you're going to the Kings with number six and you're saying, hey, we'll package a bunch of our picks together, because it's kind of that whole, you know, five dimes don't equal $1 sort of thing. The picks that are higher in the draft are just so, you just like the prospects there so much better than you do down at number 16, and, mm-hmm. and just the certainty that you feel like you have when you can pick an Emmanuel Mudiay instead of, you know, well, maybe Bobby Portis is really good, maybe Trey Lyles is really good, but it's a lot tougher to tell, and I think that's the biggest issue with the way they went about things, in my mind. That being said, I think the Celtics are also more focused on free agency than they are the draft. I think they want to make themselves look like a really good destination. Maybe for a player who wants to be traded. A player that looks at Brad Stevens and says, "This is a guy who can get me to where I want to be." I think that's a lot more the focus than getting high in the draft and getting those type of players. Not that they don't like those players, but just that that's more what they're looking to do going forward.
Do you think they've accomplished that to this point, or do you still they have more a little bit of a ways to go?
You know, it's tough for me to tell because I'm really close to the situation. You know, I watched every game this season. I was at, you know, most of the home games down the stretch. I was at the home playoff games. So I have this impression that everybody around the league thinks that Brad Stevens is great and that every, you know, free agent who comes in is like, or every, every superstar who comes in is like, oh yeah, Brad Stevens is a great coach. He's doing a great job. But that's mostly because I'm standing in the scrum when a player is asked, oh, what do you think of Brad Stevens? And then the player, you know, says, oh, Brad Stevens is great. So I think they have. It's tough for me to tell, but I think to this point, it does seem like everybody is really impressed with him. And just the fact that the Celtics were able to make the playoffs with that roster, I think a good player, you know, maybe not like obviously not like a Kevin Durant, but like a good free agent could look at the Celtics and think to himself, if I go to this team, I could do some serious damage and we could do, you know, really good things together. And I think that was what they were, you know, aiming for.
What's your price point? The one major free agent they have is Jay Crowder. He is restricted. What's your price point on him?
That's really tough to tell, mostly because I think that he's a lot more valuable to the Celtics than he is to anybody else. So I don't think anybody else is going to offer him something that the Celtics aren't willing to match. And I think they really do plan to bring him back. I don't think you want to go anything too high above like six a year. And you know, even with the rising cap, he can't really shoot threes. Although people seem to think he can for some reason.
He has the Andrea Bargnani disease.
Yeah. Like, people just close out on him so hard, and that's exactly what he wants. But I don't think you want to go a whole lot above six. I think that if he could find somebody to sign him for a deal that was a little bit more than that, they would certainly have conversations because they love him. And it's easy to see why. He was really good for them, even with, you know, his fake three-point shooting. But I think that six is probably where they would be the most comfortable cutting things off.
That's interesting. So here we go. Let's get into hypothetical trades for what could work for the Celtics. I posed this in my mailbag last week. 16, 28, 45, and the Nets unprotected 2016 pick for number four.
Yeah, I think you do that in a heartbeat, to be honest.
Brian.
Marcus, the conversation, we had this discussion on Twitter. I don't even know if I would do it, but the conversation starts with Marcus Smart. And I'm not sure I would even say yes to that, giving up the extra year of cheapness.
I don't think they definitely don't make that trade. You said four picks, right, Sam? You said the...
I did.
Yeah. I don't think they make the four picks plus Marcus Smart for number four. That's, you know, Smart's a number six pick in a loaded draft.
No,
like that's
they don't
a
like that.
Yeah. There's that's all way too much for the number four. But the other one, you know, you're looking at when you're looking at that, you're looking at really potential superstars. I mean, Hazania could be really good. Willie Cauley-Stein fits their system and fits exactly what they need. You know, and one of those two guys, or possibly both, is going to be available at number four. You don't know what's going to be available from the Nets pick. You don't know how good or how bad the Nets are going to be next year. Maybe that pick is Ben Simmons. Like, you don't actually know, but that pick also could be number 15 or 16. If you're making that gamble and number four is available, I think you definitely do it.
Yeah, and the Knicks can't afford to give up a potential franchise cornerstone for a could-be and a bunch of role players. That's not logical for them.
Well, here's the thing from my perspective. So you're talking about an organization with the Knicks. They have no first-round pick next year.
But you need elite talent. I mean, your elite talent is a dude who might not have knees in 2 years. So if you have a chance to get an elite talent in there, you have to do it. And
I guess that I think the Nets are going to be terrible next year.
Which I don't. I think you're going to be looking at a lot of the same of the Nets. You're going to be looking at a lot of mediocre, because I think they're going to try and bring back Lopez. They're going to try and bring back Thaddeus Young. Williams is still there. While he's not the same player, he's at least he's about a league average point guard now, with flashes of better and flashes of worst. And they're going to, in a terrible Eastern Conference, they probably carve out fighting it out for the eighth seed again.
See, I think there's going to be Eastern Conference teams that improve. I think I honestly think that there's going to be there's going to be more competition there. I mean, you know, the Pacers didn't make the playoffs this year, and they have Paul George coming back.
The Pacers, the Heat, are going to be better, legitimately good next year.
Yeah, so sure.
I think they're dumping Brooklyn. I think that's a top 10 pick next year.
I don't think they're a top 10. I think they're probably the high teen, mid to low teens, like right on that.
Here's the thing you have to remember. All of those Western Conference teams that don't make the playoffs, they're going to be in the 12 to 14 range. So you're talking about the Nets probably being somewhere between 8 to 11 if things go right.
That was what made the Celtics so complicated this year when they were looking at the playoffs was, you know, if they make the playoffs, you know, then they get swept by the Cavs. If they don't, they're automatically like the number 10 pick. You know, they're... Like, and that was, you know, it wasn't like, okay, well, we're deciding between picking number, you know, 14 or 15. It's like, they're deciding between picking, you know, number 16 or number 9 or 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I totally agree.
Yeah, but from the Knicks' perspective, you can't do that. You can't give up the fourth pick unless you're getting a very high-level talent back immediately and not a dart throw.
I think that's fair. I don't think I would make that trade if I was the Knicks either. I do think that there is something to be said for having the opportunity to go out and get younger players and get that cheaper talent and get you know, getting four of them. Like, that's something that the Knicks could really use. And
three first round picks with an influx of talent, that's something they need.
But there's ways around. You can find cheap talented role players, and all those picks are most likely going to end up being role players, and you're not giving up your best shot at getting a guy you can build around for role players. That's just not something you do.
I don't think I agree that it's as easy to get role players as you think it is, but
the hardest thing in the NBA is to get superstar level players. So once you do that, you fill in the holes with guys that have skill sets that are complementary to your best players.
Well, the other thing for the Knicks is, too, that, and we're about to turn this into a Knicks-level podcast, is that there are going to be major players in free agency, so they just need to be, like,
semblance
of good.
When have the Knicks ever gotten the top-tier guy in free agency? It just never happens. They get the second tier and the third tier. They traded for Melo.
Yeah, but they would have gotten him in free agency anyway.
Melo is like the one exception to this rule. I mean,
Ari Stoudemire?
Yes, you can get guys with no knees when you're willing to pay $100 million and no one else will.
I mean, Ari Stoudemire was like really good.
Yeah, and he was also really injured, and the Phoenix Suns, one of the smartest medical teams in the league, were only willing to go for 3 years. And the Knicks were the only one offering him a contract like that. There was a reason the Knicks were the only ones offering a contract like that, because they're stupid.
It's also worth noting that I don't think, I don't think that necessarily top-level free agents are looking at Carmelo right now and thinking, yeah, it's definitely a guy I want to go play with. That's where I want to be right now.
That part, I don't think the Knicks are going to get top-level free agents, but I think media and people and fans might have a different, not crazy Knicks fans that think Carmelo Anthony is good as Kevin Durant, but normal basketball fans have a different perspective of Carmelo than NBA players do. I think he is one of the more well-respected players in the league, and he probably has some pull that we maybe don't think he does, but that still doesn't change my opinion that the Knicks aren't getting a DeAndre Jordan, a Marc Gasol. They're more going to be on the Damari Carroll, Danny Green.
Yeah.
It's going to be more the role player type free agent that they're able to get.
The idea is that you push yourself into that next stratosphere next year, where that you can see something is building. You can see something is
So if you're signing those guys in free agency, why would you make a trade that gives away your chance at top-level talent to go get more of those guys?
Yeah, that's fair.
That's where I agree.
All right, now let's talk about the Celtics, okay.
Let's go to Celtics.
Please.
All right.
Ugh. That was Sam's fault, not mine.
For once, I steered the discussion.
I had nothing to do with that.
I will take the blame for that one. That's fine with me.
Tom is the guest, not me.
All right, Tom, where are some other spots that you think are, you know, plausible spots for the Celtics to move up to?
I think the goal for them, the guy I think they really like, that they would really try to move up for if they thought he was going to be available, is Stanley Johnson. Which is kind of an interesting – he's an interesting guy for them because he doesn't fit their needs necessarily. You know, they already have – like, I think they're still hoping that James Young is going to be really good. I think they're obviously, you know, they're probably going to bring back Jay Crowder. They really love him. But Johnson does really fit into Stephen's system. He's really versatile. He can do a lot of different things. He can defend multiple positions, and Stephen's just loves those guys. When you heard him talk about Kawhi Leonard this year, he was just – like, in awe over how much he loved Kawhi and just the different things that he can do. So I think the 9 or 10 range is kind of an area where that would be really interesting. I think, and I think the Heat's pick could be gotten.
10's a good spot.
Can they legally trade it?
The Heat?
If you're getting a first rounder back, you can.
Okay, because I know they've basically traded every pick they've ever
had. That's why I think it's interesting, because you could go out, you could give the Heat 2016, or give them the number 16 pick. You could give them a 2016 pick, where just whatever 2016 pick you want to give them, because again, the Celtics have 7 of them. And then you could give them, even if you needed to move another first rounder for that pick, you could. I don't think that you should, but. And I don't think that you would need to. Maybe you could give, like, a Jared Sullinger or a guy like that.
Those guys are really interesting, Kelly Olynyk and Jared Sullinger, because, you know, they get a lot of crap on Twitter, and they should. You know, Sullinger has been underwhelming. Olynyk was horrible this year. But they're still very young. They're still interesting players. You know, you're still always going to be interested by a guy who's 7 feet who can shoot. With apologies to Andrea Bargnani. And, you know, you're still going to be interested by a young guy who can rebound and who's trying to stretch the floor. So those guys, and the Celtics would be willing to move one or both of those guys as well. I think that there's not a whole lot of doubt about that. So those two are going to be, like, I don't think that they're definitely not going to give one or both of them away, but those are definitely guys that I think could be on the move this offseason.
Would you take on types? Go ahead, Sam.
It seems like they're sweetener types. Like, guys that if you need to throw one of them in to push a deal over the top, where if you're giving up 16, a 2015 first round, or a 2016 first round pick, and maybe one of those guys to get number 10.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a likely scenario, and I don't know how much I agree with Kelly Olynyk being awful last year.
Well, okay, he was. Let me do this for a second. He was so frustrating. I think that awful. You're right that awful is too far.
He was like a 17-8-3 guy for 36 with like a above average PER and a 56% true shooting percentage.
Right, like, it could have been so much higher than that if he didn't do dumb stuff a lot. He has this tendency to – he's this incredible three-point shooter. He was probably the best shooter on the team this year. I'm trying to think if probably is even – no, he was the best shooter on the team this year. And he had this, like, incredible tendency to pump fake on every three-pointer and try to drive into the middle of the paint, where everybody was taller, everybody was more athletic, everybody was just ready to just swat his shot into, like, another dimension. So – every time he had a good look from 3-point range. Like he could have taken probably 4 or 5 more 3-pointers per game, which would have boosted his averages, which would have boosted his percentage. Like everything would have been better if he had done that. He would have stretched the floor better. They played him at center quite a bit, so that, like, he would have had these big guys coming out of the lane to try to guard him. It just would have opened everything up a lot more if he had played a little bit smarter. You're right that awful is too far, but. He was a frustrating player this year. Still somebody that I think would garner some, not like serious, but definitely some significant interest if the Celtics made it known that he was available.
I think that's fair.
Would you take on Lance Stevenson to get the Hornets back?
Oh boy, you are coming at me pretty early with these tough ones, huh? It depends what I have to give up in return. Are you thinking?
Like, oh, I didn't. Now you're thinking that I thought something out before I asked that question.
Say it's 16. Say 16, 28, one of the second round picks for Lance and number 9.
Yeah, right. I think you do that.
I think that's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I think that's a no-brainer too.
Like, Lance scares me a little bit on this team that, like, was so, chemistry heavy. Like, they legitimately loved playing together. You talk to everybody in that locker room after the season, and they were just, like, this was really fun. This was a really fun team to be on and to play for. Lance, I think, I like his game a lot, so I'm a little bit, I'm a little bit hesitant to try to, like, write him off. I think that they would be concerned with that. But at the same time, when you're not giving up anything crazy, like, especially if you're not giving up a 2016, like the Nets pick or anything, to get up to number 9, I think you do that. And I think you're pretty comfortable with it, all things considered.
If you wanted to, you could just stretch Lance Stevenson.
But there's no reason to. You can get out of his contract after this year. That's the first thing.
Yeah.
The second thing is he's still a very talented player, and I think context needs to be put in that Hornets thing, which I was wrong about. I thought it would work there, but I didn't.
That's part of the reason I'm hesitant about it, too, is because I was really wrong about the Hornets. I thought he was going to make them into, like, a legitimate Eastern Conference team.
Yeah, but we just all, none of us took into account the lack of shooting and how bad of a fit he was with Kemba. Like, that,
right.
it was fairly obvious, and we all should have realized it, but we didn't. We overlooked that aspect of it, and so that part didn't work, but you can get out of the contract easy. He's talented. And the Celtics made use of Evan Turner, who is kind of like Lance, except not as good.
And also probably a little bit less crazy.
Okay, sure.
There would be some fit issues with him and Isaiah Thomas as well. Thomas is obviously a very ball-dominant point guard as well. Kind of like Kemba, he's a better shooter. But but I think that would be able to work itself out. And like you said, it is just one more year. So, yeah, no, I think that you're pretty comfortable with that, and I think that Stevens would definitely be able to make use of, especially the way that Stevenson can get a rebound and just push it immediately. That is the kind of thing, that kind of versatility is the kind of thing that Stevens just loves. He loves when guys can do multiple things and can kind of take care of things on their own. So I think he would really like that.
He could play with Bradley very well. That's someone who would actually be a good fit with him.
Yeah. Absolutely. Those guys would be a nightmare defensively if they were both locked in, and just having Stevenson be able to create for Bradley would be nice off the ball. So.
Yeah, no, that all makes sense to me. I don't know how much I would love a locker room with Isaiah Thomas and Lance Stevenson together.
Oh, God.
But I honestly might just eat the money and cut Stevenson. But
yeah.
I get it. I get the point.
I would be more open if they wanted to just cut him. I'd be fine with it. I don't like the whole stretch thing and moving and putting money into future years, especially if you're going to be getting out of that contract in a year. There's no reason to just eat the money now and be done with it versus spreading it out and hurting your cap situation. No matter who knows what that $2 million could mean or whatever it is that season and what that could end up costing you.
Sure.
Yeah, and I'm not sure, like, kind of to that point, especially with Stevenson only having 1 year left, I'm not sure why the Hornets would necessarily be that desperate to move him this year, to move down in the draft. I mean, obviously they would get the extra picks, which would be nice, but I'm not sure that they would be that pressed to go from 9 to 16, especially because, the difference between 9 and 16 in this draft is pretty significant. As far as the talent goes.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
But yes, if I was Danny Ainge and I got that phone call, I would definitely make the deal.
Okay, so let's go with what I think is the least likely scenario here, in that
right.
they stay at 16.
Okay.
Because you do have to make a pick at some point here. What direction, given what's still on our mock draft board, what direction do you think that they could go?
Given what's on your mock, it's pretty similar to kind of the expectation that I've seen around the internet here. This, like, the guys who are available are the guys who I would think would be available. There's two ways that I think that they could go. The first way is, obviously, they could pick somebody who they think they could use. The second way is that they could pick somebody who they think that somebody else would be really interested in. If they go the second way, I think they pick Trey Lyles, because I think there are some teams that are really fascinated with him. I personally don't think he's very good. I don't like Trey Lyles' game that much, but I think that there would be some significant interest, especially if they picked him. I think they could definitely interest some other teams in him and just kind of see what's available with him. If they were picking for themselves, I think there's not going to be any rim protectors, which is a big position of need. Might be a little bit over-exaggerated at this point as far as, they have to have one to be really good. I think that they're more likely to go for a shooter, for a guy who can kind of do a lot that way. I know it's kind of a stretch, but I think Justin Anderson is a really legitimate possibility for them if they stay at 16 and they're looking to keep the guy.
Aren't you already keeping Jay Crowder?
Well, that's a fair point. Although Justin Anderson, he shot well this year. He shot really well this year.
He shot really well this year.
For the first time in his career. But
yeah. The mechanics are scary. They're wonky. They've improved a lot. He's got a lot better balance when he goes up for a shot.
Yep.
It's still a little bit of like a catapulty thing. It looked like a mess at the combine. I'm not going to lie to you. It was a disaster at the combine.
Okay.
But I think that you assume that you can get him back to where he was this year. When his mechanics, they look smooth. They look balanced. His release point was a lot better. You just have to hope that you can get him back there. And, he's shown that he can be there. So maybe you do take him there. And if he can shoot, that's a guy that's worth number 16 through number 20.
Well, absolutely. And I've said this like six times now, but to say it again, Stevens loves positional versatility. And, Justin Anderson provides that. He's a good defender. He can obviously
be able to guard anywhere 2 through 4.
Exactly. And those are the kind of guys that Stevens loves. Maybe if you pick up Justin Anderson, as much as they love Jay Crowder, maybe you don't bring him back, because he's definitely got, more of an upside and he's cheaper at this point in his career than Jay Crowder would be. The other guy that is really interesting for them, that I know they've taken a good look at and they're kind of both curious and hesitant about, is another guy who I think they could definitely try to move down in the draft, actually, and get, is RJ Hunter. I know they're definitely interested in him. He makes some sense. Again, the Celtics we talked a little bit about this beforehand. The Celtics managed to convince everybody that their guys are shooters when they aren't. And RJ Hunter is actually a shooter. And obviously he didn't have as great a season this year. Obviously he was kind of the focus of every defense that played against Georgia State. He's a guy, it would be interesting to see what Stevens could do with guys who can actually shoot and could, make the Celtics not 27th in three-point shooting this season, despite building an entire offense around it. So he would be a guy, I think, I don't know that they would grab him at 16. I think that Ainge would try to be a little bit more active than that and maybe, see if they could swap with somebody and maybe pick up a second rounder or something like that. But I think that RJ Hunter is another guy to really kind of keep an eye on if they end up going that direction.
I actually had that in my most recent mock draft before the one I released on Tuesday.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, that's a very interesting one. I think that they could use a shot maker like RJ Hunter. So,
it's
also an
yes.
angry
dog.
Dog
appearances, always the best. RJ Hunter was in the conversation at some point. I'm not sure if he finished that or not, though.
He's an excellent shooter, and he would definitely spread the floor for the guys who can attack. Obviously, they're going to have Isaiah Thomas for a few years now. I think they're still going to try to bring him off the bench for the future, just you know, as kind of a high usage bench guy. But when you've got somebody like him who can attack and can kind of generate offense right away, it's nice to have guys who can spread the floor, obviously. And RJ Hunter would really provide that a lot better than the guys they currently have in place. So,
anything else we need to touch on, or is it time? Should we go with the pick?
Should we talk about Kevin Love?
We can. Should we talk about how he's not going to be in Boston next year? Because we can do that.
I mean, I think that that's more likely.
Yes. Look, Love makes a ton of sense in Steven's system. I think he would be... I don't want to say he would be better in Boston. I think he would be more productive in Boston. But that's, you know, he would also have a bigger role on a team that's not nearly as good as Cleveland. So I think that if Love was available, the Celtics would definitely do a lot to try to bring him in. But I also think that it's pretty clear that he's not going to be nearly as likely as maybe as he was last summer, if likely is the right word. And I think that the Celtics kind of recognize that and aren't going to necessarily throw every resource, you know, at their disposal at him. I think the last year as well, they really thought that if they brought in Love, Rondo might be able to recapture some of the old Rondo. The two of them might be able to really put together a core that could attract another free agent, and then they're looking at a new big three. That obviously didn't happen, and, you know, LeBron James going back to Cleveland obviously changed everything in the entire NBA. So there's going to be chatter all summer about Kevin Love, I would assume, because there's chatter is chatter and people like to click on chatter. But I think the likelihood of Kevin Love ending up in Boston is really, really, is even lower than it was last year. And I think that's extremely low. So
Yeah, I think that's fair. I am someone that doesn't think that Love opts out this year.
Okay.
I think that it just makes more sense for him to opt in and then get to the big money free agency year.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes to the Lakers. Yay.
I mean, that's very possible. I think it's a tough call for him, what he's going to do. My guess is he leans towards opting in, but it's possible he doesn't. Basically, he'd go any which direction. It wouldn't surprise me.
The one thing
I don't think anyone has a good read on Kevin Love right now.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. The one thing I will say is that whether it's Kevin Love or if it's somebody else, I think the Celtics are definitely a team to look at if players say, look, I just want to sign a one-year deal this offseason. I want to just, like, I want to have that flexibility next summer when the cap jumps. I want to be able to go out and get big money. The Celtics are definitely a team that would be willing to tell players, that's totally fine. Like, we'll bring you in for 1 year. You know, maybe tell your agent to, like, keep us in mind. You know, like, you know, that we can pay you more, obviously, with the rights and all of that. They're definitely a team that would be willing to bring in some of those guys and that wouldn't hesitate to try to accommodate guys who are interested in doing that. So,
yeah,
if Kevin Love was one of those guys, they would definitely be willing to accommodate him.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. Are we gonna get the pick?
Yeah, we go. I think we covered a vast amount of topics. I think we can go with the pick now.
All right. So with the pick, I'm actually gonna go. You know, I talked about Justin Anderson. I talked about RJ Hunter because I think those are very legitimate possibilities. I'm not gonna go with either of those guys or Trey Lyles. I am gonna go with Bobby Portis at the 16.
Oh, Sam just got really
this
excited.
It's a beautiful day.
I think that we talked about Olenek and Jared Sullinger being sweeteners, and I think that the Celtics could try to move those guys and keep the 16th pick, and you know whatever they end up moving those guys for. Portis, I think, brings a lot more of what the Celtics would like to the table than those guys do. Obviously, people talk nonstop about his motor. I know the Celtics love that. You know, they brought him in for a pre-draft workout, and I think that went well. I think people really liked him in the front office there. I think he's going to be a really good player. He's never going to be a superstar, but I think he's going to be just the kind of guy that you like to have on your team. At 16, you can do a lot worse than a guy who's definitely going to have an NBA career, and I think that's why they go with him.
Yep. think that's fair.
That's the only reaction from Sam after eight podcasts of pitching Bobby Portis to people.
I've talked enough about him. I don't need to sell him here.
All right. We like Bobby Portis on the Amateur Hour podcast. All right. Thank you. And Tom just made my life easier for the rest of the podcast now, of the rest of the mock draft. We finally got him out of the way.
There's just so much to like about him, and I'm sorry to all the teams below me that I screwed over, but I'm not actually sorry. So, Bobby Portis.
Bobby Portis, finally off the board. Tom, you got anything you want to get out there and plug?
I'm doing, for Mass Live, I'm doing a lot of finals coverage here, just, you know, watching things, trying to write about it a little bit. We've got, at Mass Live, we're doing a lot of draft profiles, obviously, right now. Just guys who would fit in well with the Celtics and why the Celtics are interested, and how these guys would fit, whether the Celtics are interested or not. So, yeah, we're just, masslive.com/Celtics, and you can follow me, Tom_NBA, all that crap.
All right, go check all that stuff out, and that wraps up another edition of the Amateur Hour podcast mock draft.